5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Money for nothing.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is the Panic Room, the new Panic Room, episode 224, which just makes it not quite so new, really, doesn't it? But it is the 18th of February, 2021, and if you're listening to the show, you're lucky because it's coming live from Houston, Texas, where most people here have not had power most of the week, so which is kind of ironic, I suppose, that on the day that NASA successfully put another Mars rover onto Mars, 60,000 Texans are without electricity. So there's got to be something in that somewhere. But anywho, we're survivors. It's bringing out the old pioneer spirit in a lot of people, which is it's kind of nice to see. But knowing that people are struggling, and it's 2021. If last year was not difficult enough, we've got this. Just over a month into the new year, and we've got all this to deal with. But Anywho. I could moan all night. I really could moan all night, but I'm not going to, because I've got the old mate Exteeda to talk to.
Come on, how are
How are you? I guess you've probably had it a little bit easier weather-wise than us. Literally, Houston's been frozen solid. I've not left the house since Saturday, I think. It's been a little bit of a week, which is you know, more than usual, or less than usual, I should say, even with you know, in the corona times, you know, at least to pop out of it. But you just can't. The roads have just been like... Just like ice rinks, it's been pretty treacherous out there.
Yeah, and you know the map that they show of the storm's path and everything, and we are just on the outskirts. I mean, our weather has been so mild. And I'm like, I cannot believe, you know, everything that's going on. I'm like, seriously? You know, last night it snowed for about 10 minutes. You know, it didn't even cover the porch, and I was like, yay, and I was excited, and I thought I was going to wake up to some snow this morning. It's already gone, so, I mean, I should be thankful. Aww. I should be like, oh, God, I'm so glad we missed all that, and I am. I really am, because I can't believe, I mean, a lot of my Facebook friends are, you know, out in Texas. I lived in Texas as a child, so I still have some, you know, friends that are there, and I'm checking in on everyone, and for the most part, all of them still had a power, but some of the mom groups I've been in, and they're telling, you know, we don't have any power, we don't have any water now, and I'm just like, it's insane.
I've been keeping a track. We have on the Nextdoor app and on Facebook, and there are people around me who I know in Texas. There's one lady I know, literally 5 minutes from my house. She actually made my corona mask, bless her. I mean, I've known her a lot of years, and she's great. And she's her and her two boys, and they were without power from 2 o'clock Monday morning. It came on for like 7 hours yesterday, and then was been off again. As people were having to boil water, you know, those people that can get water out of the tap, were having to boil on a boil water note. It's just yeah, and like you say, you know, with beautiful timing, you know, the new Mars landing happened. And bearing in mind, NASA is literally down the road from here. You know, people are saying, well, and then our state senator, Ted Cruz. It's funny. I was going to instigate a brand new segment on the show called Ted Cruz is a cunt. Because he literally just popped up. He flown with his family to Cancun. You know, this
I
24 people have frozen to death, have died. There's 66. Well, at one point, there were 7 million people across Texas without power. 7 million people, and he fucks off to Cancun. And then he's trying to backtrack, and he's come back early. He said, oh, well, my daughter's wanted to go, and da-da-da. Yeah, my daughter would have loved to have gone to fucking Cancun, you know? She would have, instead of freezing her fucking ass off without electricity. Yeah, I'm sure she would. I'm sure a lot of people's kids would. You know, the people in that... Yeah, again, coming from England, as I, you know, we sort of look to the royal family, probably more than politicians, to set an example. You see, the Queen, you know, the Queen's social distancing, she's wearing a mask, she's doing all that. People like Ted Cruz, and I know he's listening, so thoughts and prayers, Ted. they're supposed to set. Well, I mean, what kind of example is that? I mean, what does that? That's just like, you know, sticking your finger up your arse and wiggling your shitty finger at all the people who voted for you. You know?
Yeah.
When it comes round to vote for that piece of shit next year, next time round, I hope people remember this. He's the guy who went to Cancun with his family when people were freezing to death. I really hope people remember that, because it's just absolutely unbelievable. I thought it was a joke. Because, of course, when people said, you know, Ted, I thought, was he on the Mars thing? You know, is he landed on Mars or something? But apparently not. No, he did that. And it's, well, what?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something.
You know, I swear with the I've seen these memes or something that just they're like, what if 2020 was just the you know, just the trailer? And I'm like, oh God.
Oh God, yeah.
Please. I know.
Don't because, even joke
you know,
about that.
Yeah. I know. But yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's so many people out there could not wait until, you know, 2020 was over, because I guess this year was supposed to be so much better, and everything that happened then just
vanished.
And
we did say this. I mean, on what grounds was it better just because the date changed?
Yeah.
On what
exactly.
Why?
Exactly.
You know, because of that, just that sort of childish optimism. And I have it as well. I must confess,
you
I
know.
Have it too. You know, I think New Year is going to be great. You know, it's going to be lovely.
Well,
and yet here we are.
That our wonderful President Biden, you know, before he was elected, said he had these plans, you know, for the virus. And his plan is to wear two masks. There you have it. I mean, you know.
His what? His plan
only
is what?
To wear two masks. We have to double up and wear two masks. And
fucking
that's his
genius.
Plan. So.
Genius.
Yeah, I mean, if only we had known this last year, you know, we'd be much better off now.
Do you know, I feel that's such a fool. I really, why did we not think of that?
Right,
you know,
right, exactly.
Wow.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I don't know.
Too much, you know, little Joey two masks there, you know. It's yeah. I mean, yeah, we I think in the interests of you know, of fairness, we should have a Biden section to the show. I mean, to generate when there's enough gaffes like that, we'll put them all together and we'll but yeah, two masks. It's just like, you know, and yet people have been wearing one mask, and how many have died now? About 500 million?
Yeah.
So 500,000? I mean, maybe the one mask, that, you know, so two masks probably won't make a shitload of difference, to be honest. You know, knowing how these things work, it won't make any difference.
I have to say, I looked for a short clip of, you know, the crazy things Biden has said just for a segment on the show, and they were all too long. So, yeah, they were all like 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes long. I was like, shit, I'll have to, you know, maybe edit
just have
that
a whole show, yeah. Just have a whole show of it, you know.
Gosh, we're in a mess.
You think?
Yeah, I do. But we have a great show, you know, that there is that.
Brilliant. Right? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Yeah, tell the listener at home what we've got coming up.
I will. Our first guest of the night, we have award-winning romance author Pandora Spox. And isn't that a great name? That is a great name. I love that.
I'm totally gonna steal that name for my next Bizarro novel. Pandora's Spot. I think in my last one that my heroine is called Novella, I can't remember a second name now, it was Novella something.
It was?
Which was, you know, I had Wildus Guidry as well. Wildus Guidry was actually, he was in, he's the hero in my recently republished book, Buds, and that was actually a real name. That was actually a real name,
yeah.
I happened upon, Wildus Guidry. I thought, what a phenomenal name. Pandora Spox. I mean, my hat's off to Mr. and Mrs. Spox for coming up with such a great name for their little girl.
I love
brilliant.
It.
Brilliant.
I do. I love it.
You know. So,
and later on in the show,
mm-hmm.
I was going to say later on in the show, we have archaeologist and writer Benjamin Cross. So it's
archaeologist.
Yeah.
It's going to be like having Indiana Jones on the show.
It is.
So I'm excited. So I think we should. So I'll let you. I will let you introduce. And I'm just going to say the name again. Pandora Spox.
All right. Our first guest of the night is award-winning romance author Pandora Spox. Woo!
Hello.
Hello.
We love your name.
We
love
your name. I'm sorry. Is it your real name or is it your pen name?
It is my pen name, but I love to tell the story about it. Feel free to steal it because I purloined it myself. So,
oh, really?
Okay,
I love
remember it. Of course. The old TV show Bewitched. Do you remember that?
Indeed.
I
yes,
do.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Elizabeth Montgomery played Samantha Stevens, but she also played that kooky cousin Serena, right?
Yep.
Only every time in the credits, at the end of the show, it would say that Serena was played by Pandora Spock. And I just thought that was so clever, and I loved it.
Wow.
So when it, I know, so a little pop culture trivia.
I love it.
When it came time to pick
a
name, that's
brilliant.
What I had to do.
I
like it.
My hat's off to you. That is phenomenal. I didn't know that they used that that name on the show. I know she played both parts. I used to love that show. It was brilliant. It was
it was weird for me
because I only came upon it after Dallas became popular.
Oh,
I was a big massive Dallas fan, and it was weird to see Larry Hagman in a comedic role. It just was a bit of a mind trip for me, you know. It's like, but it's JR. He's being kooky and funny, and he played a very sort of straight laced sort of guy, you know. He's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Loved it, But no, I love it. Well done on the name, I have to say.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm stuck with it now. So
yes, you are.
Yes, you are. So where are you calling us from tonight, Pandora?
I am calling you from West Palm Beach, Florida, and I am feeling super, super guilty right now when I listen to you talking about how awful it is in Texas. I've seen the pictures and everything. I'm embarrassed to say it was in the mid-80s today.
Oh.
Wow.
It is so hot. I'm sitting here sweating to death, and my air conditioner is on and everything. It's just, winter in South Florida.
On the plus side, we're not spending money on the AC at the moment. I can tell you that for nothing.
There you go. Not a penny.
I mean, we're in the part of Tennessee that we're in. We just missed everything. I even have a couple people that I know just a few hours away from us in Tennessee that, have a bunch of snow and nothing. Nothing. It'll start to flurry outside, and I'll get kind of excited, and I'll go out there, and, in 10, 15 minutes, it's gone again. So, I mean, there's no way I want anything near what Texas is going through right now. But,
terrible.
I love seeing the snow. I do, and that was one of the reasons that I lived in Florida for many years. And so darn hot. I was in a bad area. I think. Well, I lived in Ocala. It's like, it's just
right
hot
in the center.
All the time.
So you missed the nice sea breezes. Well, as you know, February and March here should be beautiful. It should be time to have the windows open and the fresh air blowing through. But it's hot. It's summertime hot.
Oh gosh, Yeah, that's one reason that when I did move out of Florida, I was like, I'm never going back. So, being here in Tennessee and stuff, and I get excited. I get so excited when I see the snow. And the first year I was here, we got a good amount. I mean, and it lasted for a couple of weeks, and that was so cool to me. But ever since then, it's been, it's a little trace here and there, which is cool, too. It snowed on Christmas. I mean, you can't get much better than that. I don't know, right?
That's amazing.
Right. So, now I just, I'm still looking out the window every time, because it's kind of rainy and gooky outside. So I'm excited and hoping. But I'm like, I don't even think it's cold enough to snow. It's not even cold enough.
Right.
Here, yeah. I know, everybody, I feel bad for me. I know, it's awful.
you've no idea how bad I feel for you.
Right. So, Pandora, you're here to talk to us about your book, Broken Hearts.
I am. It came out a week ago, and I'm so excited about it.
Congratulations. Two weddings, one Valentine's Day, and hearts will be broken. I like it.
Exactly.
Tell us a little bit more about it.
So it's about two people who accidentally meet, and one of them happens to be sort of unhappily engaged, and he gets a glimpse of what his life might be. It's one of those situations where, you know, if I don't explore this avenue, am I going to regret it for the rest of my life, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So,
I like it.
So it sort of takes off from there, and Broken Hearts is kind of a play on the leading lady's name. Her name is Allie Hart, spelled H-A-R-T. So when I had my book cover designed, I had to quickly correct my designer because she made it hearts, like H-E-A-R-T-S, and I'm like, no, it's supposed to be that way. I didn't really misspell it.
Flash, got all of them.
I love
oh,
it.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, is it, I have to ask, you don't have to tell me, though, if it gives away too much. Is it a Happily Ever After?
It is. That's all I do is Happily Ever After. Yeah, I want to leave everybody feeling good at the end. So it is a Happily Ever After. There are some bumps along the way, but everything is well that ends well.
I remember a romance book I read years ago. I'm not going to mention any names, but and it was a dark romance, and I knew that going into it, but I think I still thought, well, it'll end good, you know? And oh my gosh. When it ended, I wanted to walk into oncoming traffic. It was so awful. I was like,
"Why
do this to me?" Yeah, it was just terrible. And it was still a great book, but I was like heartbroken. I really was. I definitely, you know, you can do whatever you want within the pages, but when you give me the end, I want everything nice and tidy. And, you know, I've even seen reviews for books before that kind of come down on, well, it was too wrapped up at the end. No, wrap everything up for me. You know? I want a pretty little bow. I don't care. I want a happy ending. You know, I mean, life sucks as it is. You know, we read to escape, you know, so
right,
I want the
right.
Happily after for sure.
That's what I always try to do. I may or may not have at one point killed a main character, like a title character.
Oh my god!
But even so, I really tried at the. I know, and I've had some reviews that say that, but I hope eventually at the end everyone felt at least satisfied. You know, it was still a happy ending for almost everybody. But not this one, not Broken Hearts. Broken Hearts is definitely a Happily Ever After book.
Awesome. I want to hear more. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
I do have a little excerpt. It's funny how this book came to be. This first chapter I wrote some years ago. A friend of mine, she calls herself a writer of smut, Patient Lee, issued a challenge to take a song, the last song that you heard, and write a chapter. And so I was between projects, and I thought, oh, I'll do this really quick and knock out a chapter, which I did. And then I kind of put it away, and I didn't look at it again until recently. I thought, oh, I need to finish this book. So this is the first chapter of Broken Hearts. Allie Hart tightly gripped the pole beside her as the crowded subway jostled along the tracks. She grimaced as she caught her reflection in the window, her red hair hanging in loose waves around her shoulders, her brown eyes looking tired from the strain of the past week. The subway car was surprisingly packed for this time of day, and she shifted, attempting to move away from the man who had just stepped on her toes for the third time. I hate the city. But Allison, it's not like you have a real job. You can't possibly expect Brendan and me to just drop everything and run into the city to deal with Dad. Allie replayed the conversation in her head. I do have a real job. I just happen to do it from my home. In Florida, I might add. Her sister Megan had rolled her eyes. You write kids' books. Big woo. Anybody can do that, and you don't have a family like we do. It was true. Allie lived a solitary life in a condo overlooking the Atlantic Ocean on Juno Beach. It wasn't as if she never dated. She'd simply never found anyone she could see spending forever with. It could be that she'd never met anyone who matched up to her idea of the perfect man. Allie had always been her daddy's girl. Jackson Hart, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, had never been an easy man to live with. But by the time Allison was born, age had mellowed him. The fact that she'd grown up to be a writer had pleased him endlessly, much to the further disdain of her older brother and sister, Brendan and Megan. So when the old man had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, the Hart sibling consensus was that Allie was the natural choice to deal with the fallout. As the train pulled into the station, Clumsy Feet stepped on her toes for the fourth time, and Allie glared at him. "Oh, thank God," she muttered to herself as the door split open and she allowed the sea of commuters exiting the train to wash her out onto the platform. Allie was pushed along as everyone hurried on their way until the crowd thinned enough for her to look up and see the black and white 86th Street sign overhead. 86th? Shit. The senior care center she had been headed to was on 96th. She turned just as the doors closed and the train headed out of the station. Great. Just fabulous. Walking 10 blocks wouldn't usually be a problem, but the mid-November temperature was an unpleasant 38 degrees, and a nasty sleet was coming down. There was nothing to do now except wait for the next train and hope that she would still be on time to her appointment. This is why I hate the city. "My God, Logan, the wedding is only a few months away. We have to make these decisions." Logan Price rolled his eyes, juggling the phone and his brown leather messenger bag against the jostling crowd while he negotiated the stairs down into the 86th Street subway station. "I know, Catherine, but honestly, I trust your taste. Pick what you like. Sometimes I'm not sure you want to get married," she pouted into the phone. "Sometimes I'm not sure myself." Logan judiciously bit back the comment. He rolled his eyes again. "Look, Catherine, I'm working. My client wants to build that custom retail space in the subway station. That's where I am now." Breathing deeply, he aimed for patient and reasonable. "Babe, pick the flowers you like or wait till I get back to Chicago tonight. Either way, we'll be fine, I promise, but I've got to go." He disconnected with Catherine and looked around for the clients he was meant to be meeting. Winning the bid to design the subway retail space was a big coup for his architectural firm. Price Von Holland Designs was a highly successful business in Chicago, but this job would open the doors to the lucrative Manhattan market, and the project was Logan's baby. As he scanned the crowded station, his gaze was drawn to a woman who had just gotten off the train. The first thing he noticed was her brilliant red hair. Even in the flat white light of the platform, her hair gave off a golden glow, and he had a sudden wish to see it in bright sunlight. She reversed direction to re-enter the train, but before she could, the doors closed and the train lurched into motion. Even from a distance, Logan could see her annoyance. He wondered what was wrong. Perhaps she had accidentally left something on the train. Or maybe she'd gotten off at the wrong stop. Goodness knows he had done it a time or two himself. He grinned at the memory. Then, as though she felt him watching her, she looked up and straight into his eyes. He felt a jolt of electricity. Her golden brown eyes widened as she stared at him. It felt as though everything in the busy station stopped as they gazed at each other across the heads of hundreds of passers-by. Logan felt his breath leave his body. Suddenly, a large man barreled right into the woman and she went down. Logan was by her side in an instant. "Are you all right?" "I think so," she answered shakily, pushing herself into a sitting position on the filthy floor of the platform. "Here, let me help you up." He took her hand and gently helped her stand. "Are you sure you aren't hurt?" Again, the cognac-colored eyes bored into his own blue ones. "No, I think I'm all right." They stood that way, temporarily lost in the moment. "Can we?" Logan began as the next train arrived. The woman looked toward the boarding commuters. "I have to go. I'm late for an appointment. This wasn't my stop." She seemed apologetic. Logan stepped back to allow her past him and onto the train. She stood just inside the doorway, and as it closed, she placed her palm on the glass. Logan mirrored her palm on the outside of the window, their gazes locked until the train rumbled away.
I love it. I want to follow both of them now. I love it. I do. And
I love that. That's awesome.
When you make out the signed paperback, it's XTINN.
Don't give in. Don't give in. Say no.
Don't listen to him.
Say no. Don't encourage that.
I normally don't read a whole lot of romance just because I kind of like, you know, horror. I like to be scared and stuff. But there are just times it is so nice just to be swept away or something. But I it's been a while now. But the last full books I read was a Christmas time. It was a holiday romance, and it was so sweet, and I loved it so much. Aww. And it was just I just loved it, and it's just romance in love. It's wonderful, James. I don't care what you say. It's wonderful.
I believe you.
I'm with you. I like to read a wide variety of things. I really do. But sometimes, sometimes you just want some literary comfort food. You know?
Yeah. Definitely. Now, is there steam in your books? Is there really good sex scenes?
Many of my books do have a lot of steam. I have a series called The Dream Dominance, and it's pretty explicit BDSM. This does have some heat, but it's not really, really steamy.
You know, I like that answer. I do know one of my favorite, and it was a romance, what was it? A new adult romance series that I just loved. And, throughout the books, there were three main couples. So we had like a bunch of people getting it on all the time. And there is only so much you can do with a sex scene. I mean, like before it starts to get, oh gosh, how many more times can we? Yeah. So I do think that it's just done so much to death all the time now that, occasionally, we just want the steam, and you can close the doors, and we don't need every single movement. We have imagination, so I think that's good too. Unless you're into porn,
right.
There has to be a fine line. If you're writing porn, write porn. But no, you're right. I mean, you can go to some authors will just go far too far and. Yeah, I think you could in mainstream, if you cross over the line, it's. I think it can be a bit grubby. I think Steve is right. You don't need unless it's integral to the plot. You don't need that level of. I'm a big offender. I'm writing a ghostwriting novel at the moment, and it's kind of an erotic thriller or a steamy, I guess. And I wrote the first 25,000 words for the client, and it went back through my agent, and I had to tone it down. it's supposed to be a thrill. Well, it's thrilling, yeah, but the thriller element was there, but it was overshadowed by the gynecological, I think he called it. A little bit gynecological,
right.
Here,
yeah.
Jimbo. It's a little bit. Too detailed, and he said, we don't need some quote unquote, we don't need some wetness, he said.
Right. It can tip the balance that way. Somebody once told me, and I've really taken it to heart, you can tug on the G strings, but you have to tug on the heart strings. Do you know?
Definitely.
What I really hope is to generate genuine emotion in my readers. I want them to feel these situations like they're right alongside the characters. And I feel like, sometimes as a writer writing sex scenes, it gets monotonous because how many different ways can you describe things, And maybe that effort is better spent on building emotion.
I can do a lot, to be honest. you'd be surprised, to be honest. But, in mainstream stuff, if you build the tension enough, you can leave it at the bedroom door and, like as I said, let the reader then fill in the gaps. You don't need to detail every moist bit and thrust and again, depending on what you're writing. I mean, I've also written just out and out. I'm going to call it erotica, but it's not. It's porn, to be honest. And that's where the detail. That is every detail, and that's what the readers want.
Right.
They want that close-up detail. But no, I think you're right. In the again, you look at cinema. A lot of the really good, they will have the sex scenes in, but it's done. Mm-hmm. It's done tasteful and well, and I think that writers need to take a leaf out of that book.
Right. I think that's a good point.
So, did you say that the first chapter was written from a prompt you said, or like a from the
song? My friend patiently said, take the last song you heard and write something. And I just, in that moment, I don't usually do that. I don't usually write to prompts, but I just was inspired. And now looking back, I cannot remember the song to save my life.
Oh,
I have no idea
what
it was.
That's what I
wanted to know. I know. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But I have a tab on my website where I put these little wild hares that I chase. Sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. where there's like, I'm in the middle of three other projects, but something just hits me and I have to write it down. So this chapter one of Broken Hearts has sat on that tab for years. And
wow.
I was invited to be part of a Valentine's Day collection. The thread that connects all the books is that they somehow center around Valentine's Day. And I thought, mm-hmm. this is my chance to take this story and just fill in the rest of it. So that's what I did.
I love that. Yeah. I'm a poet, and there were times that I don't know if I can actually say that I have writer's block, but there are times that I'll go for days or even weeks without writing a whole lot. And I definitely get that where, oh God, I have to write something. And I'm in a couple of groups on Facebook, and they'll have like a daily prompt, and sometimes they are just amazing to get your creative juices flowing. So I do really like them. And when you're reading, I was remembering what you were saying about the song, and I couldn't wait to ask you what song it was. So
oh no!
If you ever remember, just think of me and
I will, because, and I will let you know. I know it was something like from the late 80s, early 90s. I was in the car on the way to the grocery store, and I hear this song, and it was just in my head. And then the next thing I know, my friend is like, let's do this. And so, I'll do it. But now I can't remember what the song is at all.
Because I'm one of those readers who even wants, like a soundtrack. Like, were you thinking of any songs? Did this couple have a song? Or, I do. I love to. And I've done that before when I am reading. If the author does happen to have, a playlist or something, I'll download the mm-hmm. songs and I'll be playing them while I'm reading. And, I like to get really deep in there, so.
I occasionally do mention songs. I know the whole music thing is really touchy in terms of copyright and all that. But
yeah.
I did write I wrote a royal romance, and I just had Ed Sheeran on the brain just the whole entire time. So several times thinking out loud popped up in that story because it was just on my brain. Right.
I love that song. It's so romantic. Yeah.
I love it too.
Yeah. But I hate to do this because I'm having so much fun with you, but I think we're just about out of time for our first segment.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me. Yeah. This has been fantastic.
Yeah. You have to tell us where we can find you online.
Okay. Well, I'm everywhere. My website is pandorasboxauthor.com. And, of course, I'm on Facebook every day. And I even have a really fun group called Pandora's Passionista Paradise. And we just do fun stuff there every day. It's a special day. My favorite is Six-Pack Saturday, where we post pictures of really nice six-packs. But find me at the Passionistas or anywhere on Facebook. I'm also on Book in Maine. Do you know Book in Maine?
I've heard of it, yeah.
It is a website where it's free for readers, and what you can do is authors post little snippets of their work. And it's not like advertising, it's just you go and read these little snippets, and if you like them, then there are links you can follow if you're interested in buying the book. Okay. But you can find really great new books at Book in Maine.
Awesome. I will definitely check it out.
What a great idea.
We had so much fun with you, Pandora, and everybody go out there and buy Broken Hearts by Pandora's Box. And I definitely can't wait
Thanks.
To have you back on the show.
I'm sorry, but I'm stealing the name.
It's
no
yours
shame.
because
mine.
It's not
thank
actually
you.
Mine. All right, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Pandora.
Have a great evening. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank
Night.
You so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow, so yeah, that brilliant. I loved that. Yeah, great. I didn't know that. I knew that she played both parts, but there you
right,
go. Anyhow. right, okay, we need to press the button and we will be right back.
Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media, our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Apologize to Listen, there's a strange noise in the background. It's my puppy's asleep and she's snoring. She just snores like a bulldozer half the time. But, yeah, because I've got my headphones on, so I can't hear her. And I've looked over and a little mouth's coming out, blah, 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 you know, that sort of, hey, baby. She's looking at me like, what? Oh, it's, you know, aww, rock and roll. It is rock and roll. I think it was you, Xtina, yeah, sort of envisaged my house being like the Osborne's house.
Yeah.
We're getting there again. We've now got the three dogs, and when we do move, we're going to get a bigger house, and we're going to get at least another one. It's funny, my one of my son's lady friends, she has a pit bull and a Rottweiler, and she's going to breed them. And I said, put my name down now. I want the first litter. I want the pick of the litter. Can you imagine how adorable a Rottweiler pit bull puppy is going to look? I mean, it's like, I'll probably have all of them. Thank you. I'll have all of them, please.
How is your new snake doing? How is
she? She's doing really well. Yeah, she's feeding. You know, she'll eat, and then like 2 days later, she's looking hungry. She's doing well. You know, there's been a bit of a panic with the cold weather because shit. You know, if the power goes out and we've got sub-zero temperatures, you know. I think for future year, I'm going to look to getting at least a small generator, so at least I can keep the animals warm, you know.
Right, yeah, definitely.
Because we've got to have to think about our babies. How's your babies doing?
I know. Yeah, a couple months ago, we went up in sizes for the little mice or rats or whatever she eats, and because she was looking hungry after a couple of days. And it's getting to the point now where she's, Mondays are her feeding days. And by Sunday night, she's peeking out like, hello, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And she eats
awesome.
So good. I try to like get a little video every time we're feeding her. And it's when we open up the lid and he dangles that mouth, she's on it. I mean, she maybe 5 seconds and she's got it. It's great. She's a
there
she
you
got
go.
Such an
there
appetite.
You go.
Yeah, she's awesome.
That's good.
So,
good. That's what you want. You know, you don't want picky snakes.
Yeah, and she's had two like perfect sheds, and I just feel like such a good little snake mom.
Oh, but your baby.
I know, yeah.
Well, it's funny, my ball python that I've had since 1999, he's great. It's fine. One time, many, many years ago, I got like a mix of different, he was on mice then, and there's some brown ones in there, and he wouldn't touch them.
Aww.
He will only eat white mice. And I felt like, you know, to go and say, can I just have white? I felt like a complete mouse racist. You know, it's like, he'll only eat white mice. Like, very strange. I didn't know they were that picky. I really didn't know. I knew they could be picky, but for goodness sake, seriously, dude. You know, it's a bloody mouse, isn't it?
I've definitely heard that before, but I don't think that we've ever had anything other than the white ones so far. So hopefully, that she's not picky like that. But,
yeah, that's all I get now.
we give her a day and a half after she eats, and then so last night was when we could get her out again, and because we do like to have her out every night that we can, and we get her out last night, and the boyfriend, you know, holds her for a good probably almost hour. And I know his plan now. Yeah, because then he passes her to me after she gets nice and warmed up and she's decided to move a little bit. And
she's lively.
I mean, yeah, she, you know, and really, I mean, she almost always poops on me. And, you know, she just, you know, I think he warms her up for me so she can go to the bathroom. Yeah, but I didn't get it last night. I was very happy she did not poop on me last night, and it was a successful visit. And I, you know, because they say that once they do poop on you, they're like, don't put them away right away because they'll associate, hey, if I poop on her, she'll put me away. So, you know, when I do have,
awesome.
So when she does, I have a towel now, and I just kind of like cover it up with the towel, and I continue to hold her for a little bit. But oh my gosh, snake poo is like
we got it for my daughter, and she literally, I think it was the first day, and she pooped down my daughter on her bed, because she was playing with her on the bed, all over her bed. I had to wash because it soaked through like three layers of, you know that scene in Alien where they cut into it and the acid goes through about six decks. The snake poo was like this. It went through like six layers of bedding. I had to pretty much strip it down to the mattress, because she was like, it'll be all right, there's only a bit. But even just the smell was unbelievable. It's like, I had to wash her entire bedding on a hot wash to shift it. It was just, and now it's funny, she's a bit reluctant. I want to have to start making sure she handles the snake, because she's a bit reluctant because she got shat on. Funnily enough, my snake Monty, in all the years I've had him, not once. Never pooped on me once.
I say for Misha, she's just, she's little still. She's a little snake, and I'm thinking that's just all it is. Maybe when she gets a little older, you know, we just won't be an issue, because, you know, I had my snake when I was older, when I was younger, and never once did I mm-hmm. get, you know, done. So I definitely think it's just an age thing for our little girl here. But I keep a towel handy now. I'm like, just in case, I'm going to keep this towel here. And I know the signs now, that tail starts to lift up and you got like, you know, a second or two to get the towel, you know, and definitely tell Indy to, you know, keep a towel around. So that way, you know, accidents.
She's
your baby now.
She needs to start handling her a little bit more. So, get the towel out. We'll do that.
Yeah, it works.
So, what's coming up next? I have no idea. No, as you know, no idea. And it's always a nice surprise. Thursdays are always a nice surprise for me, because it's like, you tell me what's happening, and it's like, oh, that sounds fun. You know, somebody once asked us many years ago, do we actually rehearse this? I mean, you know, for a start, does it sound like it's rehearsed? I mean, seriously, people. But if we, I think it would lose. It just wouldn't be as much fun. You know, just be like, I can't imagine. I can't imagine rehearsing it at all, to be honest. But it would take effort on my part, so it's never going to happen.
That's true. Ever. No, it's much more fun. It's much more fun just to kind of wing things. But I am excited. We have our next guest is archaeologist and writer Benjamin Cross.
Hello.
Hello, guys. Hello.
I'm cold and miserable. How are you, sir?
I'm not too bad, actually. I'm not too bad. I'm a little bit tired. It's probably just approaching sort of 4:30 in the morning here. So if I start slurring,
you for either staying up late or getting up early. Whereabouts in England are you calling from?
Well, I'm actually calling from Wales, James. I'm in Carmarthenshire, so in the southwest of Wales at the moment. Yeah,
that is not a Welsh accent. Where are you from? Somewhere near London, I dare say.
No, I'm from the Midlands. So I grew up in Solihull. Yeah, just to the south of Birmingham. So
I know Solihull well. Yeah.
What about yourself, James? You're Yorkshire, aren't you?
I am Yorkshire. I'm originally from Doncaster. I'm actually living in Houston now, but originally from Doncaster. I lived in the Midlands for a while. I lived near Ashby de la Zouche. Colville, just outside Ashby. Saturday night out was just Ashby de la Zouche, I have to say. So, what are you in Wales? Are you just visiting? Do you live there? I mean, why Wales?
No, we, my wife and my two young boys, we all moved out here sort of two and a half years ago, maybe. We'd been living in Oxfordshire before that, and we just fancied a change, really. We wanted to get out and, you know, have a bit more space where the boys could run around and have adventures and, you know, just enjoy being outside, really. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, it's been fantastic, yeah.
I mean, I love Wales. I mean, I obviously visited Wales in the past. I mean, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful countryside there. I mean, you know, absolutely,
yeah,
love it. So, like you said, plenty of
and
spaces.
And the landscapes and the history as well. It's just, you know,
yes,
you're driving down something like the Tawi Valley, for example, and you're heading down towards Llandilo, and there are sort of enormous citadel-like, you know, castles and all the rest of it sort of rising up out of the valley. And it's, yeah, it's a really inspiring place to live.
Yeah, beautiful place. Yeah, absolutely. Do you set your books there, or I mean, the inspiration has to be there, surely.
To be honest with you, it hasn't been, because my debut novel, Colony, was written before we moved out here. So, you know, it was written a long time. And I've been sort of working and trying to bring it to publication since. But certainly, you know, the things that I've sort of experienced since we've moved out here are going to work their way into future novels, I can tell you that much.
Brilliant. Brilliant. No, it has to be. Yeah. I said that there's a rich tapestry there to go at, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and you're an archaeologist. I don't think I've ever met an archaeologist before, I have to say. So what do you archaeologicalize?
Well, professionally, I archaeologize everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
There you go.
Everything from, you know, the earliest sort of human origins in the sort of late Ice Age all the way through to present, really. So it's
wow,
a fantastic career to be involved in.
God, yeah,
you know,
that is amazing.
You'll see things that, you know, people basically threw away. I mean, a lot of what we dig up is trash, effectively. People would add it up, they buried it in a...
Yeah.
You know, we turn up, surprisingly, thousands of years later and take an interest. But, you know, you're the first person that's seen this stuff for thousands of years, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah. I mean, do you work... Are you sort of a freelancer? I mean, again, so I'm asking some probably idiot questions. Do you work for an archaeological company, or how does that work?
Yeah, so, I mean, there are sort of two main strands to it, really, in this country, at least. You'll work for a field unit, and basically you'll go around and you'll sort of dig remains up before people develop sites for housing or whatever it is. Or you can work in a consultancy role, which is what I've kind of moved on to more recently, where I'm kind of advising people on what they need to do in order to be able to build and, you know, to deal with the archaeology sensitively. So at the moment, I'm with a quite a large sort of global environmental consultancy. And we do, you know, we offer everything other than archaeology as well. So, you know, making sure that the wildlife is going to be taken care of properly and, you know, engineering and the full works, really. So.
Fascinating. So you're
brilliant.
Here to talk.
That's fantastic.
He mentioned his book Colony, and I cannot wait to read the tagline, Tomb Raider meets Jurassic Park. I loved the Jurassic Park movies. So I am definitely intrigued. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so I mean, it's set on a remote Arctic island. It's off the northern coast of Russia by about 1,000 kilometers or so, and it's within the Arctic Circle, obviously. And there's the main character is a guy called Callum Ross. He's a Scottish professor of archaeology, and he ends up on this island with a bunch of other researchers. And they're basically sort of doing surveys and things before a Russian gas company comes in and drills for gas. So they're on the island, and they get stranded, not to give too much away, and they suddenly realize that they're not alone on this island. there's something else on there with them, and they're all in pretty deep trouble, really. So yeah, it's a thriller, but there are elements of horror, elements of mystery in there as well. So yeah, it's a pretty exciting. It was exciting to write anyway, so hopefully it's exciting to read.
Yes, it sure sounds exciting. I want to hear more. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
Yeah, sure, I do. This is an exclusive for you guys, because this is as much of a spoiler without being a real spoiler that I've read. So just to set the scene for you as well. So basically, there's a sort of a security force of Spetsnaz soldiers who are stationed on this boat, and they've been sent over onto the island because one of the researchers, a guy called Dr. Semyonov, has gone missing. And so they've been sent to try and find him, and they picked up the signal from his emergency locator. So that's the background for this particular chapter.
Okay, it's all yours.
Koikov turned his head. The creature was behind him. It was the same impossible, stinking creature that had killed Dolgonasov and Sharova. Silent, still, it had craned its neck down until its face was within an inch of Koikov's. The reek of its breath was like nothing he could describe. It vocalized a sequence of alien clicks and gurgles that would not have been audible were its snout not so horrifyingly close. It sniffed gently at his collar. Then it cocked its head and it stared at him through enormous, empty eyes. Koikov froze. He had come face to face with death many times before, but this was an encounter like no other. His mind read like a military training manual. His saving grace had often been in his ability to flick straight to the relevant page. But there was no page for this. The closest thing that he could draw on now was his instruction on surviving shark attacks. Deliver a hard blow to the nose. Attempt to crush the eyes. Insert your hands into the gills and damage the internal organs. Maneuver on top of the shark. Hold tightly around the body and bear hug. But punching that nose would be pointless, and crushing those eyes would be impossible. And it had no gills, and a bear hug was out of the question. And anyway, it wasn't a motherfucking shark. It was a thing. It was a... Still, the creature stood motionless, staring. A frenzy of new thoughts crowded Koikov's mind. Why doesn't it attack? Why am I still in one piece? Could it be scared as well, or is it waiting for me to make the next move? The creature jerked its head downward suddenly and sniffed at the tracker dangling around Koikov's neck. Only now did he realize that it was emitting a frantic beep, the red dot reflecting directly in the center of the creature's eye. It nuzzled at the handset until its breath had fogged up the screen. Then it took a step backwards. It raised its head and threw it forward again as if choking. Strings of thick yellow mucus stretched from its jaws to the floor as it retched, and it chomped its teeth together, breaking them off. When it eventually reared back up, Koikov could see that it had regurgitated something. And even through the coating of sputum, it was clear what that something was. It was a partially digested hand. Attached to the wrist, still blinking, was Dr. Semyonov's emergency locator. The creature bobbed its head as if satisfied and made a low, rasping sound. In that moment, something frighteningly like a grin emerged on its face. In blind terror, Koikov flung his rifle around and aimed at the creature. But before he could fire off a shot, it lashed out with one of its hind legs and knocked him to the ground. Through his new delirium, Koikov could feel a crushing pain in his chest. Perhaps it was the heart attack that would put him out of his misery. But as the cave swam back into focus, he could see that it was the creature's hind foot stamped across his sternum. It was pinning him, helpless, onto his back, just as it had pinned Sharova, as he and Udenerd watched on, in stunned disbelief, unable to fire off a single shot before it was too late. It reared its head once again, this time opening its beak-like mouth to display its teeth. This is it, Koikov thought. My turn. He held his breath. As the creature brought its head back down, there was a loud bang, and its bottom jaw exploded. It crowed out in surprise. Another bang sounded, and this time a large chunk of its neck disintegrated, throwing a shower of a million droplets up into the air and across Koikov's face. The intermittent bangs then became a frenzy of rattling as the creature appeared to self-destruct before him. It staggered backwards, The feather's body seemed to shimmer from white to black and back again, over and over. Its legs and torso were now riddled with holes, oozing blood, and the eye that had stared so hard at Koikov had disappeared back into its skull. Then, with a final screech, it slumped down onto the floor, hammering its tail at the rock. So there we are, folks.
You can't stop there.
No. I was enjoying that.
Oh, wow.
How dare you?
I'm very sorry. Yeah.
And I have to say, you read it so well. Have you thought about getting it into audiobook? Because I could listen to you read that for the whole book. You know, I could just listen to it. So.
You have a great voice for audiobooks if you fancy a change of career.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's strange to hear you say that, because for me, my voice is not something that I'd particularly want to listen to. You know, it always seems like it's a bit monotone. It's, yeah, you've made my day saying that.
I was captivated. No, and then when he regurgitated the hand, I was like, oh my God, no, that was great. I loved that. And when I mentioned that, you know, to come prepared with an excerpt, and he asked if gore was good, and we're like, oh, the more gore, the better. We love it. So,
yeah,
a lot of
yeah,
times these authors will come with a really tame reading to read for us. I'm like, we want the good stuff. So...
Yeah.
That
well,
was
that's,
the good
that's,
stuff.
That's what brought you today, Xtina. Yeah, like I say, it's only been, you know, sort of teasers before, but yeah, you guys want gore, you can have some gore, by all means.
Yeah, I loved it. I did. What are you working on now?
Well, there's an awful lot of promotion going on for Colony at the moment. It's it's been out since the 28th of January, so it's, you know, people have a lot of people have been reading it, and it's had some great reviews and stuff so far. It to my complete surprise, it made it as a Barnes & Noble bestseller the day after it came out, which was incredible.
Nice.
And it's a couple of days after that, it was the number one action and adventure book on there as well, which was just mind-blowing, really. So it's kind of taken off to an extent. So that's pretty much my focus at the moment. And then yeah, I'll be up onto to book three after that, because I've written book two, and that's waiting in the wings.
Oh, wow.
So yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question if it was a series or more books to it, or yeah. And I was always curious about that with you know, we have some writers on that as soon as they, you know, write the end for one book, they're writing chapter one. And I just didn't know how easy that was to just step out of one book world into like something totally different. I mean, I don't think it would be that easy for myself to do. I think you'd still be in that world for a little while, you know? So I didn't quite understand how they could do that.
It's a curious thing. I think it's kind of, I mean, in one sense, it'd be good to sort of keep the momentum, wouldn't it, if you were going to do a series and sort of move straight into, you know, novel number two of the same series. But I think with this, I'd been working on it for so long, and I'd been, you know, it'd been part of my life for such a long time that it was almost necessary for me to kind of, you know, put it to one side and move to something completely different for a bit, you know. But it was, you know, I'd definitely exercised the writing muscle by that stage. So when I moved on to the second book, I wrote it an awful lot quicker, basically. But yeah, it's been exciting. It's been a steep learning curve.
How many books are going to be in this world?
Well, in this one, I'm going to be doing the next one for, so the follow-up to Colony will be done. That'll be my next project, as it were. But the next book that's going to come out is a completely different series. So that's going to be based in the Amazon basin in Peru. And it's still got the archaeology theme, and it's still sort of high octane and adventure and, you know, elements of horror in there as well. But yeah, it's going to be the start of another series, which I'm hopefully going to run concurrently with the Colony series. So yeah, that's the plan anyway.
definitely seem awfully busy. What do you, when you have time, who do you like to read?
All sorts of different people, actually, Xtina. I'm a big fan, to stick with the horror theme, of Stephen King. Obviously, I absolutely adore Stephen King books. I think Gerald's Game is one of the best concepts that I've ever read.
Thank you. That's my favorite.
That's a great book.
I have two favorites by him. It's that one and The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. Absolutely. And you know, you don't hear people say Gerald's Game that often, but it's such a good book. Yeah, I'm the one who made James read it.
Oh, yeah, I only read it because Xena told me to. I got into King back in the mid-80s, it must have been. No, early 80s, I dare say. Salem's Lot is still one of my favourites, I have to say. I read The Stand. It was the second. I read his short story collection. Then I read Salem's Lot. Then I read The Stand. I mean, it's a big doorstop of a book, you know. People rave about it, Salem's Lot for me, it was great, you know. I like Cujo, Firestar, a lot of his early stuff, you know, was brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant, brilliant. It's the unique idea. I remember reading Pet Sematary, and it's why I just literally couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
I was a student at the time, and I just sat and read it. I took to my bed and read it cover to cover, you know, it was fantastic.
That's actually one of the things that I love about Stephen King, though, is the sort of different phases that you see him go through as a writer, you know. So that early stuff, you know, you had these great, very pure horror concepts, you know, with Salem's Lot, obviously, and Pet Sematary, and some of the others in Carrie. But then he moves into this phase where I think he starts challenging himself, doesn't he? And he starts doing books that are, you know, huge door wedges, like you say, like The Stand, and then getting involved with the Dark Tower, you know. Things like Gerald's Game, for example, I think these are sort of late 90s, early noughties ones, aren't they, where he suddenly starts looking at horror in less of a monster's sense and starts looking at it in the sense of, you know, there are enough horrific things in real life that I can weave a tale out of, you know? And that's what I love
about
it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like living in Houston this past week, for a start. I mean, yeah.
How are you guys doing? Are you all safe and well? Are you?
You know, it's funny. Well, that's, I mean, we touch wood, touching a lot of wood. You know, we've managed to weather the week. We've had the ice. We had the snow, which then froze. We had the roads have been like ice rain. We just haven't been anywhere, so we've been okay. We've managed to keep power and gas and water, and we've been very, very fortunate so far. We've got another couple of days. It's going to start warm. It'll be back into the 50s by the weekend, apparently. So hopefully we're through the worst of it. But it's been, you know, as I was saying to Xtina earlier, you know, we've had people. I know people, you know, literally. In fact, there's my realtor. He lives the next estate along from me. And we was out water. His water went off, I think, Tuesday morning. And it's starting to creep back in now. So, people have been about, I mean, it's like 7 million people across Texas were without power at the early part of the week. It's down to like 60,000 now. But it's still a lot, you know, people shivering in there. People having to sleep in their cars just to stay warm. It's just been awful. It really has, you know. And we had Harvey to live through. So we've had enough people. We've had enough.
The door is closed now for more weather phenomena.
We've done all of it now.
That's it, yeah. We've been there, got the T-shirt. There was something I read which said there's two-thirds of the U.S. mainland was covered in snow at the moment or something like that. I mean, it certainly seems to be.
It's covered really a lot of it, yes. I think a lot of the southern states have had it. I think it's crept up sort of to around where Xtina is, Tennessee, which is sort of north, west of here, I think. Northeast. It has. It's just been this horrible, nasty cold snap. But I understand England's its fair share of snow and floods this past few months, yeah?
Yeah, there's been enough of it. Yeah, we've, I mean, since we moved out here, we haven't really had any significant snowfall, but certainly a couple of weeks ago when we did have the cold snap, it was, you know, it came down and it came down properly, you know. We were pretty much stranded in here. I mean, our drive goes on an incline as well, which was a bit of a
oh, right.
So, you know, but on the plus side, it gave me and my oldest boy the opportunity to build possibly the best snowman that we've ever built. So,
oh,
you know,
fantastic.
There's always a silver lining to these things, isn't
there? Yeah. Yeah, we didn't have quite enough to build a snowman, unfortunately. Me and my daughter, we actually went out in it the first morning where we had. We probably had about an inch of snow, and it was like that powdery, you know. But we went out, and I lasted, I think, 10 minutes. I thought, I'm going in, and she was in about 10 minutes after that. So, yeah, I remember when we were kids, yeah, though, in England, we'd be out all day in it, and we'd come in with you know, you'd run your hands under the hot tap to warm them up. Then you'll get chilblains, but and you come into, you're sopping wet because your clothes are soaked. But, you know, we were happy. Now, kids these days, 20 minutes, and now I'm cold. You know, sad state of
affairs. You've got to fill in a risk assessment before you have a snowball fight these days.
God. No, Peter, I read an article because of the COVID, there was a bunch of people fined for having a snowball fight, so it's beyond that.
Oh, my word.
It really doesn't. Yeah.
It's just crazy. It's just, talk about the nanny state and all the rest of it. You know, the things we used to do, I mean, I've said this before, you know, I mean, we were lucky, the things we used to do, certainly when I was a kid, that, you know, we didn't have social media and cell phones and all the rest of it. So it all stays in the past. A lot of everything we did just stays back, which is where it belongs, to be honest with you. Nowadays, you know, kids do something stupid and it's all over the internet and it's there forever. And I think that's a shame.
Yeah.
It stops kids doing dumb things.
It's a lot of pressure, isn't it? Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. And I mean, as you know, you learn very much from your mistakes, don't you? And if you're not allowed to make them and move on, then how do you learn, you know?
Yeah, well, these people, you get these, you know, again, there's a recent one, I think it might have been over here, somebody who, they posted something on social media sort of, you know, 10 years ago when they were at college or whatever, and they've lost the job because of it now. And it's seriously?
Yeah, it's happening all over. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
It is. It's a strange thing, isn't it? And I mean, it's trial by social media for anything that you've done really in your life at this stage, isn't it?
Plus, the fact that it can lose you a job 10, 12, 15 years later. Mm-hmm. For something you may have said that somebody might construe as being a bit racist or something, or a bit. It's like, seriously?
You're absolutely right. I mean, just to sort of like bring it on topic again, it's the publishing aspect, isn't it? You know, in the past, you couldn't be published as easily as you can now. You know, you could just publish yourself every second of every day on social media, but it still carries the same sort of responsibilities and, you know, legal responsibilities as well as publishing always has done. But you have no editor, you know, you have nobody to make sure that you're not going to say something that will lose you your job in 10 years. You know?
Exactly.
Social media proofreader.
You know, and if we had read the things that were going on right now, if we had read them in a book, we would have been like, oh, there's no way. Oh, this is ridiculous. Nothing like this could ever happen. Yet here we're living in.
It would come across as a dystopia for sure.
It would never get published because this is ridiculous. No, nobody's going to believe this.
Exactly.
Bullshit. No one.
Exactly.
What do you think? An oafish halfwit of a TV presenter being getting in as president? No. What are you thinking? No. Come on. You need to write more realistic. My agent is very big on, you know, real world stuff. You know, relate things to real world. You know, and overlay the fiction over real world, like I guess like Mario Puzo did. You know, he built his fictional family around the whole the real life mafia families. You know, plus real things that happen. He's very big on that, but. We last year, what with Trump and COVID and that, it's like, well, where do we go from here? You know, what do we do?
we can't really improve, can we?
We need to write science fiction and invent another planet and just everything happen over there.
I keep saying
more realistic, you know?
We're in Bizarro World. That's what's happened. We woke up in Bizarro World, yes.
I know, exactly.
Benjamin,
somebody had asked me a question on Goodreads the other day, and they said, can you tell us a horror story in like one sentence or something? And I think the only thing I could think at the time was, you know, I blinked my eyes open on the 1st of January 2021, and it was still 2020.
Yeah.
There is no better horror story than this.
Isn't it? It's just the sequel now. Or as I put it last week, same shit, different packet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But hopefully it will improve. The weather will get better, and COVID will magically go away because Donald Trump promised us it would, and we'll all be happy again. Everyone's going to be happy, and it'll all be jolly, and there'll be rainbows and butterflies, and everything will be nice. Everyone will be nice to each other. That'll be great.
On that note, we are out of time for our show this week. And we thank you so much for coming on the show, Benjamin. You have to promise to come back and see us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
Yay! I leave that awkward silence, so you have to. You're forced to say yes. I like that.
It's now legally binding. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, I knew I should have cut myself off. Yeah.
Too late.
So for all of our listeners out there, go out and buy Colony by Benjamin Cross. And thank you so much again for coming on the show. I can't wait to have you back.
Yeah, thanks a million.
It's fantastic.
We'll speak to you again very soon.
Good night.
Bye-bye, guys.
Okay, bye. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Angie. Bye-bye.
So it is. Time has beaten us yet again, and it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night. Oh, hang on. I pressed the wrong button again. It's one of those days today. I'm going to press this one instead.
Love you like I do.
Don't know.